sang this song to me. There was a message in its melody, sweetest lyrics that I ever heard. There's a message in the songs of birds. Tomorrow is another day, living is the only way. Tomorrow's gonna ever come. Listen to the words of the song. Everything, gonna be alright. Everything is gonna be.
Hi, greetings, and welcome to A Sip of Inspiration. Today's topic is Profit Pathways, Mastering Business Wealth with, and correct me if I'm wrong with the pronunciation of your name, Anwen Baugh.
Perfect.
Got it. Perfect. So welcome, everyone. This is going to be an exciting episode because we're going to talk about having your business and actually setting up your business for wealth. It's like that's an incredibly interesting concept because as we were talking earlier, we were talking about how we look at like the stock market and things like that. But this is another avenue. But before we get started, we're going to do some housekeeping. My website is champagneconnection.com. As I always say, go to champagneconnection.com. There's some free items there. There's actually some merchandise too if you're interested in it. But I want you to go there and I want you to shop and have fun. Oh, someone asked me last time if my books were there. You can purchase the books off of my website and you can also go to Amazon. I've got to thank my sponsor. So as I get my always get my little piece of paper, I want to thank the Resource Industrial Supply Equipment Company. When you need a supply company to rise to your needs, call Resource Industrial Supply Equipment. They have been sponsoring me for the last 3 or 4 years, and I'm just grateful to have them. So now, with that, I'm going to introduce our guest. Our guest is a business wealth strategist, and she's committed to empowering CEOs in their financial and business journeys as they scale. Overcoming personal financial challenges taught her that true wealth lies in smart management and strategic growth. She leverages her expertise in investment banking and financial coaching to guide you not just to envision, but to actually achieve the financial freedom and success that your hard work desires. So thank you very much for joining us today. And I'm glad to have you. You know, I love to talk about finances. And then when you turn around and mix that with businesses too, I think that is something that everyone always needs.
Oh, thank you so, so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and share everything I can around, again, leveraging your business to build wealth, to generate wealth, and to maintain wealth as well.
So let's get down to this. So your company is founder of Wealth Fluency. So tell us what you were thinking when you named your company Wealth Fluences, because that's as important as what you do inside your business.
When I thought of the name, it was basically like when you become fluent in French or you're fluent in Japanese. And I was like, oh, I want more business women to be fluent with wealth. You know, just flow with it and it becomes part of your, you know, your mother tongue, and it's not anymore a second language, so to say.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's a great way to look at it. Cool. So let's get started. You know, whenever my audience knows it, whenever we're talking about wealth and finances, I have a lot of questions. And I expect everyone listening out there to have a pencil and paper so that you can write these answers down. And you can also put in the chat if you like some questions. I actually am watching my Facebook off of my handy telephone, like I always do, for those of you who are watching it through Facebook. So don't say that you couldn't get your question in. So tell us, first off, who do you help and what are some of the first steps that you take when you're helping them with their wealth?
So I mainly work with visionary business owners. So if you're a visionary business owner, you've got big plans for your business, I am the lady for you to help you actually not only have that business, but let the business support your desired lifestyle as well. again, it's not recreating, you know, the 9-to-9. Is you're creating something that is not only going to sustain you, but sustain your lifestyle, sustain your family, okay. and also able to accommodate for the different things that life is going to throw at you.
So how did you decide that this is where you wanted to be in this space?
So this was many years back now when I was still in investment banking, my corporate role. And what I found there is that when we were working with high net worth, so when I was on projects where high net worth business owners were part of, which is one thing I must highlight, a lot, most of the high net worth individuals we worked with had businesses. Just an FYI, okay. they had businesses. So it was just how we went about the processes and how we managed their money for them. And also the things that I saw that they were bringing to the table when it came to them putting their money, putting their assets in private banks. These were individuals that for you to be able to be a customer of a lot of these private banks, you need to have a minimum of 5 million disposable income. So it for your $10 deposit or anything like that. So these individuals had 5 million just sitting there that they were willing to, you know, make it work for them. So a lot of the strategies that we're putting in place kind of got me thinking. A lot of these things had nothing to do with how much disposable income they had. Like it was very, let's say out of 100%, probably 20, 30% of it was the amount of money. Everything else had nothing to do with the amount of money. That is where kind of it came for me that business owners needed to do what they were doing a lot earlier in their business and not wait until they're, you know, seven figures, eight figures, you know, global, multinational and all that. Right.
So what are a few things that small businesses need to start doing earlier? Because as you say, we generally are taught or schooled to wait till you have so much in revenue before you start. So, and then if you're a small business, it takes you a lot longer to catch up. So what should they start doing earlier?
The very first thing is I'll always start with you. I know we hear this a lot, but you are the you in business. So it's understanding you is understanding your money mindset as well, because a lot of the things that you're doing with your personal finance, you will carry it into your business as well. So it's understanding what your relationship with money is. It's understanding your dynamics. It's understanding what triggers you when it comes to money. And when you have that awareness, how to leverage that. So I'm not in the school of you have to change. Life is too short for that. For me, it's you understanding what you are and understanding what triggers you and then how to leverage that. So based on my characteristic with money, how do I do the things that I do that is going to increase my wealth? And how do I mitigate? How do I put safeguards in place, boundaries in place for those habits of mine that are actually depleting my wealth so that it doesn't actually impact my overall wealth building? So at the end of the day, you're still you and you do not go through the guilt, because a lot of times we attach spending, we attach guilt to it, and then we give that negative energy to money and it becomes, you know, a catch-22, it becomes a loop. So it's putting things in place so that we do not attach that negative sentiment to money, so that we're able to then still carry on with certain habits like spending, but we know that we've already put boundaries in place, whether, you know, it's a slushy fund or whether it's a limit of how much it is that you want to spend, or whether it's you give yourself a time frame of when you spend. Whatever that looks like, is just, again, that is usually where I start from. It's always mindset for me.
Okay, so what are some of the things that you find in common with people about money mindset?
Money mindset, so usually it's around value, perceived value, and undervaluing yourself a lot of the times.
Okay.
That's what I see. So usually that comes out in your pricing strategy. Your pricing strategy, you could really tell by, okay, how do I value my time? How do I value my skill set? How do I value my experience? How do I think others see me? And usually that is usually quite skewed. And is being able to quantify that so you are comfortable. I know a lot of the time they like go out of your comfort zone. I was like, you could do that with everything else, but not with your money. When it comes to money, we stay in our comfort zone. We don't go out of our comfort zone. If not, the 2008 bubble is going to happen again, and you know, banks go bust because you're buying things you don't understand because you're going out of your comfort zone. So it's again looking at what does that look like. And also another thing I've noticed as well is paying yourself. A lot of business owners don't pay themselves. They don't pay themselves a salary. They're usually the, you know, most hardworking volunteer of the company.
Yes.
That is another aspect. And another one as well is this, I will be young forever. I'll love my business forever. The way I feel now is the way I will feel forever. So there is no planning in place. Your business is not your retirement plan. Your business is your business. You need to have a retirement plan, because then you need to have an understanding of, again, things would change. We get older. Our kids are getting older. Our parents are getting older. We might shift focus. And how does your business accommodate for that if the whole time you have been the main chief, you know, main chief runner, main chief volunteer, and so forth. So those are the three main things that I've seen a lot with small business owners when it comes to, you know, mindset and how that shows up in your business.
You know, it's sort of amazing that you mentioned some of those, because who's going to replace me is also a problem that large businesses have, because some of us think we're just going to live forever and we don't have a succession plan. So you don't have anybody ready to go and to replace you when you leave. And you'll be, and I know you've seen it, that sometimes when we decide to leave is sooner than they thought, or you have an illness or something happens in the family and you've got to go, but there's no one to actually replace you. So you do need a succession plan, because you're not going to be there always.
Absolutely. You have to think about it. Your kids might not want the business, no matter how much, much it is. We have to kind of think of what is your exit. Every time, so when I'm working with business owners and I'm looking at, you know, at their systems and your processes, it's like, what is the next step? What does it look like if I'm not there, as you said earlier? Mm-hmm. What would it look like if I'm going to sell this business? What would it look like when I step away? So that you make sure that you're not putting things in place that are tied to you. Because a lot of the time when you're sick, your business is sick. When you're off, your business is off. When you're on vacation, your business is on that Bahamas with you, you know?
It's just, that's right. Actually, you're right. When you're on vacation, you're really not on vacation, because your business went with you.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just putting those things in place and always thinking and be intentional, because sometimes there's some processes that are intrinsically tied to you. But if you know and you're aware, okay, I'm putting this in place now, but let's say in 2 years' time, when I bring in this person, then I'm going to hand over this particular process to them. Or I'm not going to do it. I'm going to try and automate it as much as possible. It's just the awareness of the things that you're putting in place so that you're able to, you know, step away when life requires it. What I usually tell clients is, with everything you do, give 10% extra. There's always a 10% bonus. And I say, because 5% is for people. Working with human beings, today is sunny, tomorrow is rainy. You have to allow for that with whatever it is you're doing in your business. And then the other 5% is for life. You need to pay its dues. Life does not care how much you wanted to do it. Life,
yes,
does not look into your plans or like, oh, bless, you planned it. No, life does life. So giving that 10% buffer allows you, again, to set yourself up to win. I'm like, yeah, let's trick the system, because I need to win. And when I win, I feel better. When I win, you're able to then keep doing it. It's just putting yourself in a position where you're not deflated, you're not demotivated, and you can still do what you need to do. That's what that 10% is for. So that if you don't hit the, you know, the optimal goal, you've hit the good. You've hit the realistic, you know, because it's still within your 10% buffer. And that is basically how it is, to be fair.
So are the businesses afraid of looking at their numbers? And if so, why?
It depends. So there's numbers, again, the thing about us in finance, or at least the financial industry, we like making things complex.
Okay.
And it's pretty much intentional. When it's complicated, then we kind of justify why all the mayhem is happening. We justify our pricing. And it's so confusing that nobody wants to really sit there and understand what quantitative easing is all about. And I'm like, yeah, I don't blame you. I don't want to sit and listen to that either. So when it comes to numbers, is this general, oh, I'm not good at maths? It's usually, again, it's a lot of calculations all over the place and nobody's really there to simplify it. And when it comes to like the whole finance bit as well, there are just certain things you need to focus on. You do not have to look at all the numbers on the sheet. Give that to your accountant, give that to your, let them deal with it. All what you need to do is pick out your three numbers that you need to be looking at and see how they fluctuate and understand again, when I press this, this happens. When I twirl this, this happens, you know, understand like the cause and effect of each of those metrics that we are looking like we're looking at. So a lot of it is around, again, fear of numbers, to be fair. Also judgment. There's a lot of fear of judgment that I'm a business owner. I should know all these things. I should be able to. It's like, no, you don't. Like, we've seen people on Shark Tank that have gotten the investment and for the life of them, they don't know what the numbers are. I won't advocate it, but I'm saying there is still, you know, it's not the end of the world. And also there's the general as well knowledge. You as a business owner, you wear a lot of hats, and I'm not an advocate for you to master them all. I'm like, be a master of one, but have an understanding of everything else. Because at the end of the day, you are still the CEO. You are the head, you're the decision maker. And the final thing is time as well. As you are scaling your business, you get busy. Yes. And you don't have the time to kind of sit there and kind of put these things together. What I've found with a lot of the businesses I work with is you have five systems. You have your CRM, you have your sales funnel, marketing funnel, you have your sales pipeline, and they're all in different systems. And all these systems give you analytics. But then who is going to put all those analytics together to say, okay, this is what the health of your business looks like? So it's not the lack of not having the numbers, it's piecing it together, putting the puzzle together so there's a coherent picture. So it's just, again, for me, connecting the dots to be able to give you actionable insights in regards to this is where your business is at. If we do this, we are more likely to hit that revenue goal. And your forecast looks like this, so maybe you should employ that person in 6 months' time. You know, things like that, which you do not, you cannot get yourself by, you know, taking something out of ActiveCampaign, taking something out of your QuickBooks, taking something out of your Facebook ads to try to figure out, oh, this is what it looks like. Usually they don't have that, let's say, bird's eye view overall of what's happening.
So I know people do, I mean, not just people who own companies. So those of you who are listening, it's personal too. As we do avoid looking at our numbers, no matter what they are. So that's a great way of working with businesses to have that CEO actually understand which numbers, as you said, are really important, and then the other, and which stuff he can pass off to his accounting people, because you can't do everything. So do you have a system that you take your clients through, and is it, do you modify it for each client?
Yes, I do. So it's the ROI roadmap. So, and each step is a specific, it's a journey that I take the customers through. And depending on where you are in your business, depending on what those goals are, what my goals for the next quarter, for the next 5 years is different from the next business owner. So when I start with R, is around rewriting. So we rewrite your goals, we rewrite your money mindset, we rewrite those lifestyle values and choices that you want for yourself. We look at all those and we kind of, it's the vision part where we start like, okay, this is the vision. This is what good looks like for me. This is what wealth means to me. This is what success tastes like. And I need to kind of get you to feel that, touch that, see that, so that then there's a lot of clarity in regards to everything then kind of feeds to that vision. If we want to have a 4-day week, then maybe, I don't know, deciding that you're going to, you know, do a live every day of the week might not necessarily, you know, pan into your 4-day week vision. So just little things like that. So that is what I do at the R, and that's where we always start. Then I go into O, which is optimize. And this is where now we start optimizing it. We start doing your road tests and making sure that your business is good to go. So here I'm looking at your systems. Are your systems optimized? Because what's happened, if you're familiar with AppSumo, when AppSumo came out, I was one of the AppSumo junkies. I used to buy lifetime deals because I'll get this system. I'm going to use it.
I'm an AppSumo junkie too. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I understand.
So we
buy, well, now you can help me.
We buy all these things again with a good heart that we're going to use this. We're going to put this in our business and it's going to look like this. And then the next thing we know, we have this whole, you know, product list of things we bought off AppSumo that we've not used. A lot of businesses are like that. They have a very tech heavy tech stack, that they have a lot of technology, but they're not necessarily complete. They're not necessarily using it to its full potential, and they're not necessarily completing what it is that the business owner had envisaged when they bought that tech. So that's why we look at systems. Then I look at processes. Processes are very fragmented in between business owners, and there's a lot of manual handover, like passing it from one thing to the other. And if one person forgets, that process kind of gets stuck as well. So it's looking at that and seeing that your process, again, you always start with your process. If I was going to do this manually, what is it going to look like from beginning to end? Then your systems come in to support that process. Usually it happens the other way around. We bring in the system and we're like, okay, you're here, so I'm gonna let you do this. We need to swap it. This is what I'm doing.
He's talking about me. I bring in AppSumo and then I figure out what I'm gonna do with it. Okay.
So that's basically it. And here as well, this is where I bring in all your data. So all your business data. I'm looking at financial, sales, operations, marketing, kind of bring it all together from all your different businesses and build a visual of what it is. And because I had your vision at the very top, I already have an idea of the metrics that we're looking at in regards to, okay, based on this, these are the things that we're looking at. We want to, I don't know, increase your audience. Okay, then we start looking at different aspects of what those KPIs look like for that particular goal. So it's building basically an automated, a CEO automated dashboard. That's what I build, so that you're able to go in and see exactly what it is that you are looking at in your language. I'm not gonna, you know, put a P&L in front of you, be like, yes, I've done my job, here's your P&L. No, that usually doesn't help anybody. It's like, okay, what do I do with this? What does it mean? Break it down. So I try to leave all that in the background and just give you a clear story of what's happening in your business so that you can go in, look at the dashboard and actually make business decisions. And I make sure I always check in with you every month to say, okay, this is what I'm seeing from your data. These are some actionable insights that I would recommend. And then you kind of take it from there. So it's a lot around implementation. So that's all optimizing. It's very hands-on. We kind of leave the brain and the mind and we go into the hands. And then now we go into the I, which is investing. The whole idea around the vision and the optimization is that we're getting in more money, we're increasing our profit margins, we're getting more time. So now what do we do with this more money, more time, you know, all these mores? What do we do with all these mores in our lives? And that's what investing is all about. So when I talk about wealth fluency, is basically now we've used our business to increase our disposable income so that now we have our business, which is our wealth generator, and we can expand into different product lines, again, more wealth. Or we can take our disposable income and put it in another wealth building vehicle, stock market, or you might fancy property, you go into property, or you might fancy royalties. So you might go into music and writing and all that. Again, it's giving you, putting you in that position so that you're spoiled with options. Mm-hmm. That is what my whole investment thing is all about. And it's thinking about, okay, what does my exit look like? What does my retirement look like? I know we don't like talking about that, but what does my will look like as well? And start formalizing this, start having even a draft in your mind so you know, okay, this is what it's going to look like, and you do not understand the peace of mind when you're like, oh, it wasn't that bad. It's actually in place. I'm an adult. Oh,
that's right. Oh, and it sounds like a fun process too. So because you're actually helping them work through, you know, every area of their life. Like, you know, how's the business going to look? Who's going to replace you? They're getting ready for that. And then what do you want to do with your money outside of that to build more wealth? Because I think a lot of small businesses get stuck with just making enough money to make sure that their business is going to stay alive and afloat. So they don't get a chance to look at what can I do to build more wealth for my family or me.
Yeah. A lot of businesses give you an income. They generate income, but most of them don't build wealth. So you can pay your bills and that's usually about it.
Yeah. So when you start the conversation with the small businesses, just out of curiosity, are they surprised or are they a little nervous about starting it because you're talking about revamping everything that they're doing? And I know from my own experience in working with clients, when you start talking about their money mindset, it's like, oh, wow, it's like it's too much. So how do you handle that? You got a beautiful smile, so I imagine that works for you.
Oh, thank you. It does work, and it puts everybody at ease. And usually there is an element of money mindset, again, because you think it's only you. This is only me. There's that shame about it. And after I share my story, you're like, you done all that? You were such a mess, and here you are telling me. I was like, yeah, I've done it all. I've had bay leaves carry my car away. So there is no experimental or non-experimental thing about finance that has not happened to me. So when it comes to that, again, when they do approach me, they're already aware that we're going to touch that subject. And it's just, I guess, creating that safe space in regards to, for me, it's not me radicalizingly trying to change you. Usually that's where it is. It's a bit like the gym, you know? In January, everybody's like, yeah, I'm going to lose weight. By January the 7th, it's all out the window. And I'm trying to avoid that because when I work with you, I want it to be permanent. And the best way to work with somebody is to leverage your strengths. So I leverage your strength. I was like, your money minds, you're a spender. Okay, let's work with that. How do we make that work for you? And how do we put things in place so it does not work to your detriment? You know, or you're a saver. Again, nothing is good or bad. Nothing is black and white. It's usually the context. So if you see a spender, if you have a spender and they're buying things every other week on the stock market, you will not say, oh, that's a bad habit, would you? But then if you see the same spender and they're every other day at Macy's, you'd be like, oh, that's a bad habit. Again, context. So it's understanding what your personality is and then leveraging that. And when it comes to numbers, it's minimizing it. You don't need your P&L. You do not need your cash flow statement. You don't need all of those things in your face. You just need to pick out what it is that you need to pick out to know which levers and which pulleys you should be, you know, using to move you to the next step in your business. And a lot of times it is fear, and it's something that the fact that they've approached me, they're already willing to say, yes, I'm ready to deal with this now. And the pain is strong enough for them to want to deal with it. Because if it's not, then they'll just, you know, hang in there, still taking the painkillers. I was like, yeah, tomorrow's going to be a better day.
Yeah. That is not true. So can you share some other key principles or strategies that individuals can implement to achieve financial freedom through investment banking?
So, well, when it comes to investing, a lot of it, for me, first of all, make sure you are comfortable. You have to be in a comfortable place to then start gambling, which is basically what we are doing with investment. It's not guaranteed. You're putting your money in there, hoping that you're going to make a return. So you want to make sure that it's not taking food off the table. It's not taking a roof over it. It's not taking a roof off your head. And once you're in that position, and you've kind of put those things in place. So when I started out, I had this 50, 20, 10, 10 when it comes to the income. And what I used to do, so usually it's like 50, 20, 30, but I kind of split mine 10, 10.
10, 10, right.
It's again your income. So whatever you're paying yourself, which before I even talk about paying yourself, if I go back to your business, what I recommend, one of the strategies is profit first. I help clients put in profit first methodology. And this is, again, looking at the fact that you need to make a profit. So every money that comes into the business, you take away your profit. You take away how much you're going to pay yourself. You take away how much your expense is. And you take away how much your tax is. When you've taken those four things out, whatever is left, that's what then you use for your expenses. This kind of makes it intentional so that you're always making profit. It makes it intentional so you're always paying yourself. What currently happens, or what is normal, is that you have sales. You say you do 10K in revenue. Then 6K of it is expenses. And now with the 4K that you have left, you're trying to figure out, oh, I need to pay this person. I need to pay his taxes. And it should be the opposite way around, where first you do all those things and then you say, okay, now I have 3K left. Okay, my expenses have to be within that. It's not going to go above it. So when you have that set up in your business, then at least now you know that every month you're paying yourself a salary. With that salary now, that's where the 50, 20, 10, 10 comes in, where 50% of that salary is basically your daily living. That is what you pay your bills, do everything else. And then your 20%, no, your 30% is your wants and needs. So after you've dealt with rent, bills, all that, then you have wants and needs, which is the 20%. And then your 10% is your savings. And then the other 10% is your investing. So that means that you're covering all the bases. You're able to live your day to day. You're able to enjoy life because, again, you have your wants and your needs. And then you're making sure that you're putting money away for savings, and you're also investing. And it kind of covers all of that. So those are the two main things that I'll definitely start every business owner on. Profit first, you set up that. So you're paying yourself every single time and you're making your profit every single time. And then that kind of, budgeting role in regards to how you allocate your money when you've actually paid yourself.
So, and that's a good, the 50, 10, 50, what is it? 50, 20, 10, 10, 10. Yeah. I think that was one of the Rockefellers were famous for teaching that method to their kids. So that actually can be used too, if you don't have a business, because you do need to save money, you do need to pay expenses, and you do need to keep some for yourself. So that's actually a very good habit. So when you talk about investment banking, what are some of the misconceptions people have about investment banking? And after that, what about financial coaching too? Because people have misconceptions about financial coaching also.
So when it comes to investing, You don't need a lot of money. You absolutely don't need a lot of money. When it comes to investing, we're not talking about day trading. There's a lot of people online that are teaching day trading. We're not talking about day trading. We have professionals that can barely do it. I would not advocate it. If it's your thing, I mean, go for it and do your Forex trading and so forth. But that is not really what it's about. What it's about is actually putting money in a company and basically hoping that company will do well so that you get returns, whether it's an increase in your share price or whether it's dividends that they'll pay to you out of the profits that they've made. So you do not need a lot of money to start. You can start for as little as $5, to be fair, depending on, again, which platform you go with. And also, it doesn't have to be day trading. It's not something that you have to be looking at charts every day. You can go into funds and kind of put the money there, and then the funds does everything else. Or you can actually buy individual shares, if so you choose, and then trade that way. But it's not something that you have to do every day. So it's just kind of stepping away from, oh, you need to have a lot of money. No, you could literally start. Remember I said that 10%?
Yes.
It could be 10% of anything. It could be 10% of $5, to be fair. So there are options out there. And also, the stock market is being democratized the last few years. Mm-hmm. That is allowing you to even buy half a share now. Yes. So even if you want to buy Apple, you do not necessarily need the full bank $300 for one share. You can buy half a share. So there are ways for those that want to actually get into it. And you do not have to go through a banking system as well, because one thing about banking systems as well is that they're not open market. So if you go to Chase is only going to offer you the products within Chase. If you go to JP Morgan, oh, they're the same people now, isn't it? Wells Fargo. Yeah. Wells Fargo, they're going to offer you only the products that Wells Fargo is offering. And you'll notice that they're different. And so if you go to open market, literally that's what it is. The world is your oyster. You can kind of pick from there. So when you're going via a bank, you need to be aware of that they're only going to show you a selection of what is in their store. They're not going to show you, you know, everybody else's store. So bear that in mind when you're going via a bank. And that is basically it, to be fair. What else?
You know, there are a lot of new online places where you can go and buy fractions of shares for stocks too. Are people really having luck with those?
From what I could see, they are. It's nothing particular. It's the same old platforms. If you've been buying shares before, it's the same platforms. Some of them have started offering it now that you're able to buy fractional shares. Okay. So if you're already using, I don't think Robinhood does it. I don't use Robinhood, but I don't think Robinhood does fractional shares. But if you do, I'm trying to think of the American one. I can't think of their name. They do fractional shares.
Yeah, there's several in the U.S. that does fractional shares now. I think there's some of the smaller companies that started doing fractional shares. They didn't want to miss out on that. See? So for those of you all that are listening, when she says it doesn't matter the amount that you start with, the big boys want some of that too. So just get started is the key. Let's just get started.
That is absolutely it. Get started. Get started now, not tomorrow, not yesterday, now.
So how do you suggest people just sort of access or assess their financial goals and create a plan? That's scary to a lot of people. So what should they do if they're afraid to create a financial plan and that's what they need to do? Because most people it's scary. They don't want to think about what they don't have.
There is that, but you'd be surprised how much you actually do have. Not only in regards to money, a lot of the times we're looking at when it's finally money, but a lot of things kind of happen before it becomes money. There's a lot of potential before it becomes money. So we're only looking at the final when it's here, rather than all the things that we have. A lot of the potential we have, we're not tapping into because we're looking at that one, you know, trickle that becomes money and not this avalanche of things that we have in our life, what we've learned and our skill set. So it's kind of looking at that. And when we're looking at financial planning as well, it's very, very different between when you're doing personal finance and you're doing financial planning there, and when we're doing strategic financial planning for your business. Mm-hmm. They're quite different in regards to what it is that we look at. But if you're a business owner, all business owners need to have personal and business, whilst non-business owners just have personal. So it's being able to marry those two. So when we're looking at personal, we're looking at, okay, definitely you being able to cover yourself for whether it's 3 to 6 months, 6 to 12 months, depending on what your scenario is and how much debt you have. And also if there are any loans that you have out there. And again, if you have things like mortgages, if you have things like kids, how old you are, one size does not fit all, although there might be a general rule. They're just different things and different things to aim for. Let's say for a business owner, one would recommend having 12 months mm-hmm. of expenses whilst, you know, if you're young, single and unattached, they might say 3 to 6 months is good enough for you. If you have kids, they might like, okay, we might give you 12 months, although you're not a business owner, you know, things with kids as well. So you kind of take that into perspective, but definitely we want to start with a minimum of 3 months. Always start with the minimum. If you can do more, let's do more. Because a lot of times when we go 12 months, it's like, oh my God. that's a good sum of money if you're telling me my 12 months expense, I need to have it put away somewhere. But you need to have that put away, starting with 3 months, so that's easily accessible. Again, you do not want to be having to jump through hoops and sign multiple papers just to get to your money. So that should be easily accessible. Then now we start looking at that, you know, 10% investing in regards to what does that look like and what is my aim for this? Is it, you know, 3 to 5 years because maybe I'm putting money away that I'm going to pull out maybe for mortgage, or is it towards my retirement? So we're looking at 10, 20 years and that is when I'm going to be pulling it out. That also determines what you're looking at. So that's very much personal finance focus. When we're looking at strategic business financial planning, here we're looking at your forecast. We're looking at, again, your exit. What does your exit look like? Where do you see your business in 5 years' time? And start putting those in place in regards to what does your staffing look like? And start putting, you know, standard operating procedures in place so that anybody, and I'm putting anybody in quotes here, anybody can come in and replicate that specific process in your business. So we're looking at those things then and doing that forecasting in regards to, okay, this is what we're going to achieve. This is what we're trying to achieve. And these are the things that we need to do and run different scenarios when, you know, the economy is good, the economy is okay, and the economy is fantastic, and run those different scenarios so that you're not going to panic mode if anything goes outside of what we hoped for, and putting those in place. And then again, investing for the business. So we're going to invest in R&D, so that's research and development. Are we going to invest in innovation and start looking at those? So that is what that would look like for a business. And you kind of have to bring the two together so that one feeds into the other as a business owner.
So can you discuss some typical challenges that individuals would face on their journey to financial success, and how do they overcome them? Because I know people are listening and say, oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. Yes, I need to do that. Yes, I need to do that. And then when this is over, nothing happens.
Inaction.
That's right.
Inaction is the very first thing. We have great ideas. We are bombarded with a lot of information. We're literally walking billboards. We have a lot of information, but we do not implement any of it. And that is usually the difference. A lot of what I've said now, I would not be surprised if you've heard it all before. And I would not be surprised if you've done none of it as well. That is basically the difference between the wealthy and the not wealthy. You basically start taking action. So the first thing is inaction. And not taking that step, and always future focus. A lot of businesses is like, okay, when I'm doing 250K, then I am going to start. When I do six figures, then I'm going to, when I have this, add one more client, I'll add one more, then I will do it. There's always the when I.
Yes.
When I. So
yes.
That is usually with the business owner. And then the other thing as well is giving up. Sometimes you might go into a strategy. Sometimes you might try something new and it doesn't give you the results immediately because maybe you didn't necessarily tweak it to fit your lifestyle, your business and your DNA, so to say. So you give up, or you do not run it long enough for you to be able to, you know, see if it actually works or not. So giving up midway is one of the other things as well, where for me, for example, I could only work with certain business owners that have reached a certain threshold and have worked a certain, have had their business for a certain amount of time. Because what I've noticed is that, like, for when I'm with younger businesses, when I used to work with younger businesses, when they hit a snag, they start dropping things.
Okay.
Considering things a luxury. And it's like, your financial management is not a luxury, but I could see where you're coming from, because right now you need people through the door. So we need to bring money in. If I have no money in, there's nothing for me to manage. And I'm like, that is understandable compared to a more mature business that kind of know that for me to bring more people in, I need to know what's happening with my data. My data will tell me why people are not coming in. But you cannot tell that to somebody that is, you know,
right,
needs bills. So that is something that I've learned. And that is to say that sometimes you have to try something long enough to be able to then see why it did not work. And when you don't, you just keep repeating the same cycle and you keep giving up because you've never gotten the answer to basically this hypothesis that you've been trying, this question that you've been asking out there. So does that answer the question?
Yes, it does, because people do give up quickly. And I've had a thought to go back to the money mindset, is that a lot of times people don't take their money mindset seriously. So they don't finish all the work that needs to be done when you're dealing with the money mindset. So then it's easy to stop when you hit a bump in the road, or it's easy to keep going in a direction that's telling you that that's the wrong direction, because some people think that they can literally overcome and just push that boulder out of the way when maybe that boulder is a sign that they need to do something different.
Absolutely. Money is emotionally charged.
Yes, it is.
Money, we try to use our heads. Our heads has nothing to do with money. Our head has nothing to do. Literally, all our head does is tell our hands how to count.
That
is,
okay. I love that. Okay.
It does nothing else. It's just that is it. When it comes to money, it's emotionally charged. And whether we like it or not, we don't necessarily like to delve into that. I'm left brain. I'm a very numbers person. So when we start delving into emotions, at one point, I was like, that's why I kind of did financial coaching as well, because that helped me then deal with the emotional side of money, because I came with it, investment banking, very number, these are the numbers, tick, 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 calculator. Instead, no matter how much calculating and how much summing and how much formulas you're putting in that spreadsheet, if the person is not emotionally there, it's you, yes, yourself, and her. So
it's going to be me, myself, and I, right? So when you're dealing with that and all the psychological things start to show themselves, how do you help your client with that? Because for those of you who are listening, it's like this, none of this is good or bad. It just is. And you can tweak what just is to make it work for you instead of working against you. So it's not bad, okay? You just need to know.
you literally just need to know what it is that you, what are you working with?
Right.
Working with, you know, if we have a Ferrari, we're going to drive the Ferrari. If we have a Toyota, we are driving. All what we're doing, we need to drive it. So
right.
Understanding what it is you've got makes you understand, okay, this is what I'm driving with. These are the pros and cons of a Ferrari. These are the pros and cons of my off-roader. Let's work with it. Let's make the most of it. A Ferrari, maybe we need to be on more tarmacs. Our off-roader, let's hit the mountains. So we do more mountaining and less, you know, that's the kind of things I'm talking about. So I kind of lost track now. Where was I going with it? I'm off-roading. I've off-roaded myself right now. Yeah, I've off-roaded myself.
So are your clients surprised when they do discover what their money mindset is? You find people are surprised by it?
Not necessarily surprised in regards to, I cannot really tell something about you that you really didn't know. Like some of it is loud and you know, and some of it is a whisper. They're like, shh, shh, shh.
Okay, but you still know.
You still know. So you kind of still know. A lot of it, where they're surprised is when I'm showing them how it shows up in their business.
Ah.
It's usually like, oh, no, that's fine. That's personal. I could deal with it. I was like, yeah, but this is the ripple effect. This is why this is happening in your business. This is why you are doing this in your business. You know, this is why we're not hitting the targets that we said we're going to hit, because it's coming from here. So being aware of that kind of puts you in a stronger position. There was a Gallup research that kind of showed, and this was for employees that kind of showed that companies that leveraged, allowed their employees to work on their strengths, put them in tasks that were on their strength, the companies were making 40% more revenue. And I'm like, 40%, that is decent. So all you have to do is work on your strength, you know, focus on your strength rather than trying to strengthen your weaknesses. That is an absolute waste of time. Like, not even joking, a waste of time and loss of money. So focus on your strength, mitigate your weaknesses, and you get 40% better results. I mean, that's a win-win, right?
Right.
It's just looking at it from that perspective and understanding where the stories are. Why do you have that story?
Right.
Where does that story come from? Is it beneficial to me or not? Because some stories are beneficial to you, and others, they've done their time. It's time to close the book and put them on the shelf. Know that they're on the shelf and leave it on the shelf. And other times, I'm going to say, yes, maybe, you know, it's more therapy route. But again, those are not the individuals that I've worked with. But I know that sometimes your finances are symptoms of something much deeper that is not just financial coaching anymore. It's not just money mindset anymore. So it's just appreciating that and discovering. For you to reach higher, you need to dig deeper. There is no two ways about it.
Yes, that money mindset shows up in every single thing that we do. It shows up in every single thing that we do. So, and as you said, sometimes it's loud and sometimes it's like, shh, we don't want anybody to know, right? And I always tell people, like, and you see people out using their money, exchanging it for things that they know that they probably shouldn't buy, but then they have the whole conversation at the counter. I shouldn't buy this. This is stop upsetting the money. The money's here already. Just enjoy it and move forward.
Absolutely. Whether it's personal, you see that happening a lot as well when business owners need to pay their taxes. They have that same conversation. And again, attaching, there's a lot of, when we said earlier, there was a lot of emotion attached to money. There's a lot of energy attached to money.
Yes.
And the energy always loops back. You know, energy cannot be created or cannot be destroyed. It just gets exchanged. Yes. That is like the law of physics.
Okay. It only gets transformed, as you said. You're right. You can transform it, but you're not getting rid of.
No. And we have to be cognizant of the kind of energy we're attaching to every transaction that we're making with money. And what we're trying to do, again, is almost position ourselves to win. So if we know we're going to go shopping, let's go shopping and let's shop happily. Don't shop and then feel guilty about it.
That's right.
Just ruin the whole experience. And for you to do that, have your slushy fund. Even if, again, for me, I am one of those people, and I had certain triggers that I was like, okay, when certain things happen, I'll just go out and spend. But what I noticed when I started looking back was that it happens maybe two, three times a year, give or take, when that thing happens and you just go out and buy 10 pairs of shoes. And I'm like, last I checked, I'm not a centipede, but hey, I'm buying them all. But it came to a point where I would buy all of them and then have them in the car. And my husband and I had different cars. So I would then sneak one by one into the house so he doesn't notice that there are new shoes in the house. So you see, when I say there's nothing you've done that I've not done, but that is, again, my money story. And I see that, okay, there's certain triggers. And because it only happens a certain amount of times in a year, I kind of have to put money away to cater for that emotional outburst, so to say, so that when it happens, first of all, I do not feel crappy because whatever is happening, I'm feeling some way about it. So I'm not almost exasperating it, that I feel bad for whatever it is that is bothering me. Then I feel bad about how I reacted to the thing that was bothering me because I went and spent and bought 10 shoes. So if I could just, okay, soothe myself and then not feel bad about how I soothe myself, that is then gives that positive energy to money, because I was like, I'm not doing anything because I'm kind of already knew that there's certain things that trigger me. And because I know that it doesn't happen every day, if it's happening every day, that's a different conversation. It's not money mindset no more.
Right.
But because it only happens a few times per year, I'm putting my money every month towards that. So when it happens, I have money there that was meant for that. I was put away for that. If it doesn't happen, hey, baby, mimosas, we're going on a holiday. Because, again, that is what the money was therefore. So again, know what your story is and know what it is that triggers you, and then put things in place so that then you don't attach the negativity to it and you don't charge it more with the wrong kind of energy that then comes back to you. Because you send bad money out, bad money comes to you, and it just loops.
Yes, and when you're buying shoes, remember they won't buy themselves. So
wear them, please wear them, at least that.
Wear them, right. It's like, so I want to thank you for joining us. This has been a fantastic opportunity to actually talk about the money mindset, and what people can do in their businesses in order to be sure that they're growing a business that will still be able to sustain them after they leave the business, because they've done proper planning and everything. And that's just fantastic. So tell people where they can get in touch with you, so that if they need to reach out so that you can help them build their business wealth.
Oh, absolutely. So you guys can find me on all the social media platforms, mainly LinkedIn. That is where I hang out as Anwinba, as you can see on your screen. If you have any questions, shout out there. And also you can go on my website, where I have a quiz for you to find out how much you should be paying yourself. Don't be the chief volunteer officer of your business. Know how much you should pay yourself based on where you are and your revenue in your business as well. So any questions, I'm here online for you.
Thank you very much again. And as I always say to the people who are listening to me, may this day offer you just what you need in each unfolding moment. I want you to be inspired, and until further notice, celebrate everything. Do not go gently into that good night. I want you to find a hero worth dying for and taking it. And I want you to be the person that you have been waiting for. Make today so awesome that yesterday gets jealous. And above all else, do it your way. I'm Stephanie Wilson Coleman, known as the Empowerment Doctor, and it has been a pleasure to be here with you guys tonight. Thank you, Anwin. I really appreciate it.
With Lupe.